from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Katie Orr, in for Michael Krasny. Beyoncé is many things to many, many people. A new anthology digs into Mrs. Carter from multiple perspectives, from social media influencer to Black Southern woman. Join us as we discuss Queen Bee and her power and creativity. And tell us, what effect has Beyoncé had on you? That's next, after this news. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. I like my baby hair with baby hair and afro. I like my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils. I earned all this money, but they never take the country out me. I got hot sauce in my bag. I see it, I want it, want it. I want yellow. Welcome to Forum. I'm Katie Orr, in for Michael Krasny. Bring the beat in. Queen Bee, a new anthology about Beyoncé, lays bare just how hard it is to define her influence and her work. She's a visual artist, a singer, a rapper, an activist, a social media influence, a mother, and dare we say, a feminist. In this segment, we'll explore Beyoncé's creative force, how she has managed to transcend genre and make so many people feel seen while coming into her artistic self. Let me tell you who is joining us today. Veronica Chambers, she is the editor of Queen Bee, a celebration of the power of creativity of Beyoncé Knowles Carter. Her other books include Mama's Girl and Yes, Chef. She's also the editor of Past Tense, an archival storytelling initiative at the New York Times. Michael Eric Dyson is a professor of sociology at Georgetown University. His latest books are What Truth Sounds Like and Tears We Cannot Stop. And Dr. Robin Boylarn is an associate professor of interpersonal and intercultural communications at the University of Alabama. Her books include Sweetwater and The Crunk Feminist Collection. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Forum. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I want to get into the big question, the overall question about Beyoncé, and I'd like you all to weigh in with your ideas. What is so appealing and fascinating about her? As we mentioned in the intro, she seems to have transcended like pop icon status into something bigger. What are your thoughts? Veronica, let's start with you.
I'll jump in. I think that what has made her so huge is that there's just this amazing amount of surprise and creativity, I think, especially with the last three albums. You know, she's created a platform in which she does not need to ask for permission. She does not need label approval. She doesn't need anyone to sign off or say yes. And so she goes away. She comes back with these extraordinary, not just musical albums, but visual albums, and it just blows your mind. I think that lately we've been talking about the idea that there's not really such a thing as, there is the beehive, but there's not really such a thing as Beyoncé fans or not Beyoncé fans. There's just a range of admiration and appreciation, and it's its own Richter scale.
Yeah, I think that is so true. That's such a good way to put it. You know, I consider myself a fan, but I have friends who are, I mean, 10 times the level of fandom that I am. And then you have people who, you know, just like a song or two, but certainly are aware of her presence and her influence. Michael Eric Dyson, what about you? What do you think is so amazing or appealing about Beyoncé?
And has already been brilliantly stated, she transcends genres. She's able to fuse varieties of competing forms of aesthetics. In other words, so, you know, you got the visual artist that's in her that expresses itself through, you know, two visual albums which revolutionized American art, especially American music, by joining the métier of, you know, visual expression with aural, A-U-R-A-L, you know, expression, what you can hear and what you can see at the same time, and joining them together and forcing one to depend upon the other immediately for its interpretation. But then you think about what she's done in regard to fusing singing and rapping. I mean, when Jay says, her husband, Jay-Z says, B's a rapper too, when he's shouting out all the people that influenced him because he was named to the Hall of Fame songwriter, the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Yeah, B is a rapper in a sense. I argue in the piece I have in the book that tremendous collection that Veronica Chambers put together, I argue that in one sense she's a precursor to and a godmother to mumble rap in terms of elided syllables and distorted, expression and the cadence, the flow. So she's done so much there. And then when you add in the politics of race and feminism and her growing self-awareness as a black woman in America, a global icon who has really shattered boundaries, and yet she also expresses the common everyday struggles of black women, because despite everything we're saying, she still hasn't garnered the top two awards at the Grammys, and even Adele said, what the F does she have to do? Well, be you, white, female, British, not Beyonce. So she represents both the infinite possibility of black excellence and the ceiling that is continually put on black people still.
Absolutely. And we're absolutely going to get into the Grammys and what it is about that organization that doesn't seem to maybe get what Beyonce is trying to do. But first, Robin Boyler, and I want to hear from you. What are your overall takeaways on Beyonce and how she's become this cultural phenomenon?
I think that a lot of it has to do with her relatability, particularly to other black women and girls. You know, we have watched her grow up in the public, and even though she has become or became deeply private about her personal life in terms of giving interviews and whatnot, she uses her art and craft to remind us that she is like us, that she goes through some of the same things, that she it within her relationship, that even someone as seemingly close to perfect as Beyonce is aesthetically, she still faces some of the same challenges in her relationships and in her self-esteem that every other black girl does. And so I think that relatability makes her central to a narrative that gives visibility and credibility to the black woman experience.
Let's hear a little bit from Beyonce right now. Here's a cut from Run the World Girls, a single released in 2011 from her fourth album. There's that drum line or marching band element to this. Robin Boydland, what do you hear in this song? It's a song very much that focuses on female power, but there's also a bit of Southern pride in it as well, which you wrote about for your essay in this book.
Yes, I think that the fact that she shouts out Houston, Texas, as she's also making claims about women's empowerment or girl power, is very significant. I think that she finds a way to hone in on her southernness. Even I think that a lot of people focus in on the ways in which she did that in Lemonade, but I think even before Lemonade, she always found ways to focus on where she's from and how that influences who she is and how she sees the world.
And we noticed a lot in this book, there are a lot of essays talking about how Beyonce makes people feel seen who hadn't felt seen for a while. Veronica, can you kind of talk to that a little bit? How do you think she's able to do that?
A couple of things going on. To the points that both Michael and Robin have made, I think one of the things that's really extraordinary about her career is that she has defined herself in a way that she never has to leave her blackness behind. And that was something that previous generations of artists really struggled with. So you constantly have this thing where she's taking her whole self and her whole culture with her. And that in and of itself makes people feel seen and makes her feel relatable. But then the other thing I think that's really interesting is that what you see is that as there's so much focus on her, but as we continue to stay fascinated and interested in her, she brings other people into the frame. And she does that from bringing in artists like Big Frida into her lyrics, into the visual album of Lemonade, and bringing in people like Ibiye and Chloe and Halle and Serena Williams. She's constantly broadening the frame and saying, don't just look at me, look at all these other people that I find interesting and powerful and admire. I mean, she did it just a few weeks ago on her Instagram account, Black History Month. She put up a huge collage of women that not everybody might have known, like Glory Edom from Well-Read Black Girl and Tarana Burke, who's one of the premier Me Too activists. And so she's constantly saying, you see me and I see you.
I'd like to invite our listeners to give us a call. How has Beyoncé impacted your life? What kind of fan are you? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. Michael, I'd like to weigh in with you. You write in your essay a lot about Beyoncé embracing her Blackness. How do you think that has changed for her over the course of her career?
Well, it has tracked her own evolving understanding of who she is as a Black person. I mean, we have these terms, and we tend to use jargon about, you know, Blackness as a constantly evolving reality, race as a social construct. These are languages we toss around in the academy and assume people know what we're talking about. And yet outside of the academy, those terms are not as familiar, even though the ideals probably are. So here's a woman who has embraced her, you know, what Kimberly Crenshaw calls intersectional identity, the ways in which her feminism as a woman, her gender identity as an evolving feminist, her racial identity as a racial activist and advocate for justice, and her understanding of the politics of poverty and want in this world. Those things have kept track with her evolving, you know, confidence as an artist, as a person who's able to command respect and to control the narrative of her life. When Professor Robin spoke about, you know, what's central to that narrative, the reality is Beyoncé is one of the very few Black women who's able to dictate the terms of her interpretation to a degree, at least in terms of self-expression. When Vogue magazine has to ask her, right, to come to her, I think it was Vogue, and she determines who the photographer will be. And then we discover, to our great chagrin and enormous surprise, that this is the first Black person, I stand to be corrected, who actually is serving as a photographer for a cover shot, you know, in that magazine. So here she is revolutionizing the very medium that ostensibly represents her, and yet she's dictating the terms of her interpretation through that medium. That's power in a very serious fashion. So Beyoncé is coming to an awareness of who she is as a Black woman. She's a lighter-skinned Black woman, which means she has been advantaged by colorism within African-American circles, where light, bright, and almost white, and I'm a light-skinned Negro myself, has been seen as superior to and therefore more desirable for Black culture. But she's been a victim of the same kind of politics of color, too, people making presuppositions about her because of her light skin, or that she may not be as, quote, authentically Black as another person whose melanin is more obvious. Then, more broadly, the ways in which, you know, those color politics or politics of color have played out in a global economy of aesthetics and desire and who is seen as beautiful. So her awareness of herself as a woman, as a Black woman, who's able to define herself as beautiful. And then think about it. Her own mother warned her in Coachella, which she turned rapidly into Baychella, the first Black female to head that music festival. And she told her mother that she was going to do you know, a historically black college and university themed presentation, her mother worried, oh my God, will they understand? Will they know? Will that offend or somehow alienate the white folk? And she said, look, this is what I spent my life building my political capital for. And if I can't expend it the way I want to now, I'm not worth much, right? Look how she responded in Elle magazine when people were insulted by the fact that she had a Black Panther-themed, you know, halftime show at the Super Bowl. And she said, look, if you got insulted by my pride about my race and celebrating Black history, that was a problem you had long before my particular expression. And then finally, you know, when she handed an award to Colin Kaepernick, she said, look, it has been said, and she proved her philosophical depth here, you know, Jean-Paul Sartre and brown skin, so to speak, or maybe Simone de Beauvoir. Here she is saying, look, it has been said that racism is so American that if you challenge racism, it looks as if you're challenging America. That's a profound understanding. So here's a woman who has rigorously embraced a conception of blackness that is still exploding and evolving and expanding, and she is unafraid to be who she is in her own skin, and that has taught the world some valuable lessons.
I want to go now to Aziza from Oakland. Aziza, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. I'm very honored to be in your phone presence. My name's Aziza. I'm a daughter of a Black Panther who became Orthodox Muslim. And as we kind of transferred into more of a diverse population, I was more so taught a doctrine that was talked about indecency and immodesty, and was really kind of led towards not really embracing and seeing that kind of as an alt culture that was very demoralizing and very dehumanizing. But as I began to, as my paradigm shifted as an African American woman, I began to look at the values I was taught or I was like, I guess, around, and I began just kind of breaking out. And I remember the first thing I did was, I played this song for my mom. It was the one about, like, on the beach, drunken in love. And I was like, Mom, that's me. That's who I am. That's what I like. And my mom was like, okay. But it really was, like, me being able to define myself through art. When I filed for divorce, again, leaving my community and what I was grown to know, I happened to be around the time that Formation came out. And I remember just, like, being, like, solo. I think I might even, like, been on the floor. And she was just saying, you know, get in formation. I kind of, like, perked up with a doo-doo, doo-doo. I was like, oh, what, huh? And then my mother's Creole and my dad's from Mississippi. So I was like, I'm Negro Creole. And that song, I played it all night. And another one of my friends did, too. And we were just like, okay. So I'm a little bit of a late bloomer for Beyonce, but I'm so happy to be able to relate with her, Lemonade, and also as a proud graduate of two HBCUs, Howard Law and Tuskegee University, she reminds me of the happiest times of my life, like listening to the band at homecoming. And as I begin to write and kind of as I am in a better space, I hear her. I have a little poem about me basically being like behind her. And her being like a dancing doll or one of the dancing girls at the band. And I'm like an eight count behind her, basically. Like, you know, like she's kind of like the queen bee as she is. And so I'm in the beehive, you know, in my own way. And I love playing with my daughter. She's 9 years old. And she just became student government elect for the fourth grade. And she, who runs the world? Like every time we do Alexa, it's always Alexa. Beyonce.
Well, thank you so much, Aziza. We appreciate it. Veronica, what do you think about that call? I mean, I think it speaks to the fact that, again, Beyonce makes a lot of people feel seen, and she's actually providing like the soundtrack to a lot of people's lives.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's what's so interesting there is that you get the sense of intimacy that we feel with her work because you don't feel that she's hiding behind songs that other people wrote or things that other people want her to sing. And I will say, going back to Dr. Dyson's comment, one of the things that really becomes clear with Beyonce is that all of these gifts that she gives us, from Beychella to the surprise albums, she cuts the price tags off. So you don't really, it's easy to underestimate how much work has gone into it. I mean, I still remember the tweet that Questlove did after Beychella, and he was like, you guys, the music orchestration of that level of performance is months, sometimes years in the making. And she went out there and made it seem like just a party. And so I think the thing that she's doing both intellectually and on the stage, there's so much work and homework in it that it's really extraordinary.
Yeah, and Beyoncé has been very public with like the struggles of her marriage too. Robin, talk a little bit about that. What do you think it means for people to see her, you know, this woman that so many hold up as, you know, someone that they aspire to be like, being open about her struggles with her marriage?
I mean, in all honesty, while it is humanizing in many ways, it is also devastating, you know, for a regular black girl to be like, damn, if Beyonce, I'm sorry if I could say that, but, you know, like if she can't have someone who will honor her and want to be with her and be faithful to her, she's Beyonce. And if she can't accomplish that, then the rest of us definitely can't, right? So there was a way in which it felt like an opportunity for us to kind of come together and use her lyrics and the lyrics of Warsan Shire that were included in that Lemonade, in the Lemonade album, to kind of think through what has happened to us and process it, but also find a way to get through healing. Because one of the things I loved about that album was it went through the hard parts, but it brought us back full circle, that it can be okay, that reconciliation, whether that be with a partner or with yourself, is possible. And so it reminds us that we'll be okay, and that we're not defined through and because of our relationships. But I think that there's also this empowerment in sexuality that Beyoncé has gifted us with as well, that we have seen in much more sophisticated ways as she has become a grown black woman herself. You know, so we saw it in various ways throughout her career, but when she was younger, it was much more naive. And as a grown woman, it's much more self-assured. We see her as someone who owns her body, her sexuality, her ability to do what she has to do for herself and her children, with or without a partner. And I think that is very empowering for women to hear, particularly those who have also faced infidelity.
Well, and I want to get to this later. We'll talk about the fact that Jay-Z has actually apologized for that. And Veronica, maybe just briefly, you can, and again, we can talk about it more, but, you know, tell us how revolutionary was it that Jay-Z publicly apologized to Beyoncé?
I think it was hugely revolutionary. And that was one of the reasons I was so happy that Brittany Cooper wrote the essay about why his apology matters. Because I think one of the many gifts of Beyoncé is that there's a whole generation of girls who are growing up and they are able to listen to her music and they're able to say, okay, that whole idea of happily ever after, complicated. Marriage is not a fairy tale, but there can be healing and there can be growing and there is a conversation after who did this and who stepped out and all this kind of stuff. There is a before to that and there is an after. And I think that's pretty powerful. I mean, I think there's very few musical artists who have provided for young women and young men that kind of template of a conversation.
Tell us what effect Beyoncé has had on you and what you think the secret to her genius is. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Welcome back to Forum. We're discussing the art and influence of Beyoncé with Veronica Chambers, editor of Queen Bee, a celebration of the power of creativity of Beyoncé Knowles Carter, Michael Eric Dyson, professor of sociology from Georgetown University, and Robin Boylorn, associate professor of interpersonal and intercultural communication, University of Alabama. I love this song. I just have to... little dance break there. I want to go now to Lola in Oakland. Lola, you're on the air. Tell us what you think about Beyoncé.
First of all, thank you so much for featuring this wonderful anthology and these great scholars and thinkers about a really great cultural force of our time, Beyoncé. And I have 3 points I want to make. The first I want to make is that, you know, my marriage fell apart because of infidelity, and Lemonade felt like it was really written for me. Like every single song, you know, really felt personal, which is incredible when you think of the scope of a, you know, kind of a global pop figure like Beyoncé felt so personal, even in her, like the visual album, those things combined were just so moving for me. And the second thing is, as a Chicana, I really appreciate the way Beyoncé is, like, particularly in her most recent work, is like, just like so blackety, blackety, black, like unapologetically who she is, a woman of color, a black woman from, you know, from the U.S. and owning that in a way that is so prideful and joyful. And it's culturally revolutionary. For her to be such a mass global figure, it's so awesome to witness that and be a part of that.
Well, thank you so much.
Third thing,
the third thing
I want to say is I feel like her work really also embodies like the Renaissance concept of sprezzatura, like something that's working really hard but seems effortless, because you really feel like Beicella, you really, or anything she does, you feel the level of perfection, and it's flawless and seems so smooth, but you know just the hours and days it took to get it there. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Lola. And, you know, Lola brings up Lemonade and how it was so important to her. And I know so many people were just blown away by that. But it didn't seem to translate into the Grammys. And Beyoncé has never won the Grammy for Album of the Year. In 2017, Lemonade actually lost out to Adele's 25. And during her acceptance speech, even Adele acknowledged that Beyoncé really should have won.
And I'm very humbled and I'm very grateful and gracious, but my artist of my life is Beyoncé, and this album for me, the Lemonade album, was just so monumental, Beyoncé. It was so monumental.
Michael Eric Dyson, what did you think about that moment?
Well, first of all, I was grateful to Adele for shattering the patina and the cloud of white privilege that, you know, hung above her and that rained on Beyoncé's parade, and for her own, you know, unintentional, inadvertent complicity in the very white privilege that she outed, because she still accepted the award, of course. But Adele helped us focus on the fact that if you've got what Hegel called a world historical figure like Beyoncé, I don't think Hegelian language is too fancy to apply to this woman who is, you know, one of a kind, sui generis. So the thing is that if Beyoncé can't, similar to what Professor Robin was speaking about in regard to the discouragement of having Beyoncé cheated on, and if she can be cheated on, then any woman can be cheated on and what that might mean. Look at the fact, if Beyoncé can't be recognized for her genius, for her world-changing genius, for her ability to bring together different genres, to shatter boundaries and cross borders and be able to simultaneously embrace the highest of high culture with esoteric appeals and resonances of candomblé and orisha and female black deities in the world, and to conjure them in a fashion that would make them palatable in a pop cultural forum. If she can't be recognized for that genius, then really nobody can. And look what happened to her husband, Jay-Z, who was nominated, what, 8, 9 times for his own groundbreaking album and got not one single award, period. So that says to us that no matter how high you rise, no matter how big you are, no matter how much money you got, as Stevie Wonder said, you can't cash in your face. And that means the persistence of white supremacy, the lethal logic of the limits that are imposed upon black people, no matter who they are, that no matter how large your trajectory is, no matter how global the landscape upon which you occupy, or the powerful artistic medium that you command, that you still have to deal with the funky, foul, nefarious, insidious, you know, beliefs about blackness that penetrate consciously and unconsciously every element and layer of the world there is. And so that's why it's important that Beyoncé not forget that she's a black female in a world where black female identity is constantly being absorbed, exploited, and then demonized simultaneously. And I think that that, you know, when Adele made that statement, I hope and pray that we continue to take a look at the fact that if Beyonce can't be awarded at the top of this heat pile, that she still can't sell as much as Taylor Swift. And I'm not denying Taylor Swift's ingenuity. She's a prodigy, been writing her own songs since she's been 15, but she ain't Beyonce, you know, and which is why I argue in my chapter that not only did Beyonce do all this stuff that should be awarded at the top of her own profession, but she's also, to me, in my own mind, snatched the title from Michael Jackson as greatest entertainer ever, given what she's able to do on that stage as well. So given all that, it reminds us of the stakes of blackness, the powerful limits that are imposed on blackness, and female identity, and that if we have an intersectional analysis about the possibilities, we have to have an intersectional analysis as well about the limits that are imposed.
Well, and you bring up a point about Beyonce, you know, trying different genres and things like that. And Robin, I wanted to ask you, she had a song, a country song, really, called Daddy Lessons, but it wasn't really embraced by the country community. What did you think about that? I thought the song was, I love that song.
Right. It was definitely, it met all of the requirements for a traditional country song. But it was being sang by a black woman. And I think that's one of the reasons why it was rejected in full. And I think that also speaks to one of the reasons why her work is not legible to some people, because she's a black woman. So even though she transcends genre, they don't understand how to interpret that, because she's a black woman who sings pop, right? And so it's almost like by limiting her to that, what do we do when she also does R&B and also does rap and also now does country? But I can't imagine what, and so, and I think that also the fact that when her song has been covered by white women, it's accepted by white country audiences. So it's definitely a representation of the ways in which her blackness and her unapologetic blackness and her insistence that her black brilliance can transcend her blackness isn't always accepted by non-black people, because black people got it, and we got that was a country song, but when it came time to give acknowledgement to it, it was ignored. It wasn't even allowed to be considered for the award.
Let's go now to Leslie in Alamo. Leslie, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
So I've been listening to the show, and, you know, I think Beyonce is talented, but one thing that really I find bothersome about this discussion is that, and I will say this about a lot of female performers like Beyonce and Madonna and so on, I think the image that is portrayed is kind of almost anti-feminist in a way. I mean, I think the image of a lot of the women performers, pop performers, the message to young girls is not one that I think is, you know, helpful. And I'm not saying that in a conservative way. I'm just saying that, you know, I think that, you know, being just it's kind of an over-sexual presentation that I think women should strive to be professionals and get ahead using their brains, not just their looks. And I worry that some of these pop stars, you know, I mean, and I'm not saying she's not talented, but I just think that the image that's portrayed for girls is not particularly helpful for them to, you know, really become, you know, powerful figures in society.
Well, Veronica, let's get your response to that caller.
I think it's an interesting conversation, and I think it's a worthwhile conversation. I think that the point that Dr. Robin made about the way that Beyonce owns her sexuality, I think you definitely see a growing up from crazy in love even to drunk in love. There's a progression. There's something that's happening beyond a kind of performative aspect of sexuality. There's deepening levels of it. It's not for every age group. At the same time, I think that what's so interesting to me, and I would love to hear Dr. Dyson talk about this, is I think we should just talk for 2 minutes about Miss Tina and the incredible amount of creativity that this woman put forward in those two daughters, because in Solange, you have a very different artist, and yet one who's, I think, equally as extraordinary. And so I don't know, personally, I just want to read the Miss Tina parenting book, because I think between Beyonce and Solange, they've both now given the world so much music, so much creativity, and they really have shown how to inhabit Blackness in really different, distinct ways.
And we want to hear another song from Beyonce. This song, Flawless, is from her 2013 self-titled album, and it has one of B's more memorable lines.
I woke up like this. I woke up like this. We flawless. Ladies, tell them I woke up like this. I woke up like this. We flawless. Ladies, tell them, say I look so good tonight. Goddamn, goddamn, say I look so good tonight.
So there's so much in this song, and I really would like to hear all of your comments on what it says about, you know, performance and particular standards for women. And there are some people wondering, you know, is this a satire? What is she really trying to say here? Robin, let's start with you.
I think it's she's offering us a commentary on self-confidence and braggadocio, which I don't necessarily think is a negative thing. And because, you know, kind of coming from the caller's take on her performance or the performativity of her sexuality and the influence it may have on other people, I think that it's important to not just pay attention to what we see, but also what she says. And keeping in mind that she is now also the mother to two daughters, that I think that when we get caught up on, because I don't even know as a feminist what it means to say that that Beyonce is not a good example of that, because she is a powerhouse. She's very a self-made woman who is unapologetic about who she is, who is very confident and self-assured. And those are the things I think that the qualities that we do want to teach our young girls, including being, knowing who you are and being willing to say who you are no matter who says otherwise, right? So I think that one of the things in Flawless is ownership of self-confidence and I know that I am that girl. I think that's something that we should encourage young girls to embody and to embrace, that you are enough all by yourself and that you're bad and you may not be.
Okay, Robin, I'm sorry. Your line is just breaking up there for a second, so we'll come back to you in just a minute. I want to get to a listener tweet. It says, not to come off as anti-B, but I find it hard to take part in the obsessing over any individual. No one did anything alone. No one. We must always recognize that while practically deifying a single individual. I thought that was interesting because it gets to the point that Veronica was making about her mother, Tina, and how she weighed in. And Michael, let's go to you on this. What role did Beyonce's mother play in, or is she playing in her career?
Well, a big one, but I'll speak to that, but let me speak back to the woman who called in about her sexuality. It amazes me. White women can do all kind of stuff. We got a self-made billionaire named, is it Kylie Jenner, who literally has written the Black Phallus of Ray J collectively into extraordinary talent, right? That entire family and its public reputation rests upon reference to, allusion to, seminal Blackness in terms of its contingent relationship, right? Both literally in terms of a sex tape, which then got transmuted into a platform to project that entire family into extraordinary stardom. Now, I'm not denying the genius of the Kardashians. I'm not denying the skill that it takes for them to sustain themselves, but they are granted permission to be hypersexualized and to transmute that hypersexualization into a pop phenomenon that has enriched the coffers of that entire family, and they are seen. Now, I know there's a lot of critique of them, but there's a lot of celebration of them. Janet Jackson shows a nanosecond of nipple on television and is literally blackballed for the next, 20 years. And when we see that Les Moonves really was behind that, ironically enough, outed himself and fired from CBS for his alleged Me Too activities. So it's amazing to me that when it comes to Black women being in control of their sexual identities and in command of the ways in which their own sexual entities, persona, will be, you know, energized in the culture, I think we have to be very careful about talking about that without paying attention to race. Secondly, the woman kept saying, well, Beyonce is talented. I don't know. Ariana Grande is talented. Beyonce is a genius. As a woman, recognize the genius of what she does. This is what Ms. Chambers meant when she said, and quoting Questlove, that we won't even recognize the difficulty, the level of complexity, the mastery involved in what Beyonce did. So don't just say, well, she's talented. No. Stop an anti-feminist, persona enacted through your gender that gives you cover as a woman to woman. That's female-on-female crime and the inability to acknowledge her genius. And then finally, yeah, Mama Tina is a tremendous, tremendous force. Black parents in general don't get their love. Richard Williams, the father of Serena and Venus, didn't get his love. Tiger Woods, old man. Now, as a black woman, Tina Lawson has produced two very dissimilar but equally remarkable musical phenomena, prodigies and genius. And, the kind of explicit politics of black embrace that Solange represents, the unapologetic assertion of self and the black self as the collective, platform through which we articulate an ideal about our struggles over time and space. And then Beyonce, a sweet soul, Solange is more explicitly verbal and demanding and, in your face. Beyonce, not so much. And yet Beyonce's own blackness, her implicit blackness versus Solange's explicit blackness represent, a dual phenomena of expression within blackness about how we get to the end goal of collective black self-expression. And I think her two children are the manifestation of an ingenious attempt both to manage the politics and mechanics of political expression of blackness explicitly and the implicit base of black excellence as a forum within which we articulate our own self-identity. So I think that mama is amazing. She should be mama of the decade. Mm-hmm. And Miss Tina, check her out on Instagram. You can see she got flavor of her own as well.
Okay. Well, now let's go to Danny in Oakland. Danny, you're on. Danny, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
I would not call myself a member of the Beehive, but I'm sure my loved ones would. I've been listening to Beyonce since, Destiny's Child. And speaking to motherhood, her music, her offerings, not just the music, have helped me to grow up two young adults, a male and a female. I have a daughter and a son who are both grown-ups now. And into phenomenal beings. She is absolutely a part of my village. We have an expression, it takes a village to to raise a child, in that she has shown my daughter and my son that, women are powerful. We are all powerful, and sexuality is not to be sexualized. It is to be, expressed freely and without fear of any repercussion. And just tagging on to that, Mama Tina, good Lord, I love that woman. I don't know her, obviously. However, what she has done, just tagging on to what you guys were just saying, is so amazing in that, raising someone in the circumstances of just raising a black child in this country and then raising a phenomenal black child in this country, the guidance and nurturing and just self, strength that it would take to do that is absolutely just amazing to me and something that I look to. And so I just want to, Beyonce is so humble. She has so much humility. There's so much giving. There's so much that she just does, that we just don't really talk about. And I think that has a lot to do with who Miss Tina is and how she raised her. And so, while I am a fan and I love the music and go to the concerts, I think I'm a fan most of what it allows me to give my children in the way of seeing someone who is so successful be so good.
Thank you so much, Danny. We appreciate it. We've heard a lot about this hour about Beyonce's Lemonade album. And on that album, of course, is Formation, the song. It's a song that just about every essay in Queen Bee mentions. Let's hear a little bit about that.
My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama.
Robin, Boy Learn, you speak to this line in your essay. What does this say to you about Beyonce as a Southern woman, and how is this different from Beyonce's earlier work?
I think that in that particular line, she is tracing a lineage and genealogy of I'm not just, you know, I'm not just going to shout out Houston, but my people come from the Deep South, right? From Alabama, from Louisiana. And, you know, and I think that that in a way that was also like a roll call to Southern Black girls, to country Southern Black girls, in a way that was like, oh yeah, right? And it may, and I think it in many ways it also connected us to her and to a particular type of Blackness that is unique to the South in terms of the aesthetic, which we see her emulating in some of her in her videos. You know, when we see her with a gold grill, right? That's from the Deep South, right? When we see her donning her braids, her cornrows out of a El Camino, that, you know, that's a Deep South aesthetic. And so I think that it was a way for her to point to us, but also invite us in. And then we see ourselves and representations of ourselves in that video, in that formation video that was, that showed us from every potential, from every angle and every scale, from dark skin to light skin, from, you know, from riding horses to being in the beauty shop, you know. So I think that it was definitely a roll call for us.
And Veronica, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about her Super Bowl performance in 2016, where, of course, she did this formation performance, and it stirred up a lot of controversy for some people, depending on where you fall on the Beyoncé fan spectrum.
I mean, it's interesting. I think that for me, the most memorable moment was when the lights went out. It was like she shut the whole thing down. You know, I think the power and the freedom is the thing that I keep coming back to. And to, you know, go back to the tweet that said, talked about deifying a single person. I think what's so interesting and what was so great about putting this book together is nobody said she walks on water, she's better than everybody else, you know, we're not fit to drink Beyoncé's bathwater. I think that really there was just so much to explore in the body of work. I mean, it's like looking at a visual artist like a Glenn Ligon or Lorna Simpson. I mean, she's given us layers and layers of work. And I think that that's what we see on stage at moments like the Super Bowl, but it's also now in the collective body. There's so much to explore and think about and unpack.
Let's go to Shabazz in Oakland. Shabazz, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I wish that entertained us with the visibility of Beyoncé, Jay-Z, Snoop Dogg, Mary J. Blige, all of the African-American entertainers and whatever genre they come from, and even on the silver screen. I wish that they would gear a lot of their music toward, you know, encouraging Black students to stay in school, get an education, like James Brown did, you know, stay in school, get an education. Edwin Starr back in the day with his song about his anti-war song. In other words, most of the music we hear today is about relationships. When we live in a world of issues, we need to be dealing with a lot of the issues that is killing Black folks. And I think with the visibility and the popularity that a lot of our Black entertainers have, they are mute on these issues, and they could do a whole lot of good in encouraging Black folks to be more positive as opposed to more destructive.
I want to go to a comment right now. A listener writes, I am not a fan of Beyoncé's style of music. I know very little about her, but I appreciate the information I'm getting from your guest. It's good insight into understanding more about the struggles of the Black community. And I want to ask each of you, you know, before we wrap this up, if there's a song that you think people should listen to from Beyoncé today, what would that song be? Veronica, let's start with you.
You know, one thing that we didn't talk about is the work that she's done in Spanish. And as a Latina, as an Afro-Latina, I feel very strong about how powerful she is in both English and Spanish. And so I think Mi Gente is both an anthem of togetherness in English and Spanish. And it's about calling on your people and knowing who your people are. So that would be my song.
And Michael, what about you?
Well, to respond to the listener very quickly, Edwin Starr did, you know, a war, what's it good for? Absolutely nothing. But he also made 25 miles to go, girl, and my feet are hurting pretty bad. James Brown did talk about I'm black and I'm proud, but he also made Sex Machine. So Marvin Gaye made What's Going On. 2 years later, he made Let's Get It On. So to really pigeonhole these artists in a narrow framework is the problem. Jay-Z on every album has made a political song. Beyonce has been talking about blackness and politics in implicit fashion and then explicit fashion, using her platform in a way that's extraordinary. I think that Formation song is pretty remarkable because it brings together both tracking the great black migration. You know, before 1910, 90% of black people lived in the South. So Houston, Texas is an extremely important, fertile landscape to propagate blackness and to talk about her Creole, Negro, blackness, get in formation, stay gracious, best revenge, get your paper, to talk about the use strategically of capital to defend your advocacy for justice. So I think of all the songs, you know, Run the World, Girls, Love on Top, but that song, Formation, I think, is an extraordinary exemplification of her politics. And then the song Freedom with Kendrick Lamar, where she really gets explicit about the embrace of black advocacy for black excellence and justice.
And Robin, you quickly, what is your song we should listen to today?
I would recommend Blue, which is a song she writes about becoming a mother and about her daughter. And I think that is a song that is about her relationship with her daughter, but not about a romantic relationship. And it gives us a different dimension to who she is and what her desires are for her own child.
We've been talking about the art and influence of Beyoncé with Veronica Chambers, editor Queen Bee, a celebration of the power of creativity of Beyoncé Knowles Carter, Michael Eric Dyson, professor of sociology at Georgetown University, and Robin Boylorn, associate professor at the University of Alabama. Thanks for joining the show. I'm Katie Orr, in for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.